This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Oh, yeah, I get my pay on Friday around here. Lola! How are you, everybody? Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works. It's Monday again, isn't it? Seems like it happens every time this week. I am Paul Malloy, along with Big Ed Davis. Freedom Works, that's the show. Thank you for joining us. In a few minutes, Trey Kovacs of the Competitive Enterprise Institute is going to join us. He's going to talk about what Donald Trump should talk about tomorrow night when he addresses Congress, especially when it comes to getting people back to work. So we're going to talk labor and employment with Trey. And speaking of Congress, they have returned today to continue the supposed Obamacare repeal. But will they really get rid of it or just give us Obamacare Plan B? We're going to talk about that as well. And, oh boy, did you stay up to the end last night for the Oscars and the collapse when the wrong Best Picture was announced? Was it a mistake, or did Donald Trump get hold of the Oscar envelopes? We are going to discuss that as well. Ed, did you watch, my friend? Did you see that? Ed looks like he probably went to sleep too early.
Absolutely not. I refuse to watch those shows anymore because did anybody take their top opportunity for a political rant?
Are you kidding? Does the sun shine first in the east?
Boy.
Did they ever? Jimmy Kimmel?
Oh, I figured.
Although I must tell you, I didn't watch the entire thing. I couldn't take the entire thing. But at the beginning, he had a pretty good monologue. He did get some Trump things in. I must say, some of the jokes were pretty funny. But boy, did he go after Trump. And there were a bunch of others. So I'm thinking that they... Trump sent out his henchmen. He got the envelopes, and they started moving them around a little bit because they announced the wrong picture for Best Movie. It was so unbelievably wonderful.
Oops.
Just absolutely. And you know who was up there? And I bet I'll bet between the two of them, they have paid cosmetic surgeons, I would say around $1.5 million, okay? But Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty. Presented the Best Oscar. And you know how it is when the tension mounts, they start to open, right? Okay, it was Warren Beatty opening the envelope, okay? And all of a sudden, he starts to slide the card out of the, and he's looking at it. And I thought, well, Warren, go ahead, or hand it to Faye. Mm-hmm. You know? I thought, hand it to Faye, that'll be very... He's looking at it, he finally hands it to Faye Dunaway, and he's got this wild-eyed kind of stare. And she looks at it and she goes, and the winner is La La Land. And all of a sudden, the place erupts.
Right.
Right? And all of these people come fight. I mean, they decided they were going to bring their entire contingent, probably the entire cast of the movie and everybody behind the camera. So I had all these people up there. And it was, oh. And the first guy gets up there. He must have been one of the leaders of the movie. And he goes, so, I want to thank everybody. And I mean, they really got into thanking people. I mean, I think the guy had finished.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, Warren Beatty comes back. He said, excuse me. He said, I got to. And he comes back and he says, we've made a terrible mistake. And from there, it went downhill. It was like, it was surreal. It was surreal. Then they made the announcement of Moonlight as the winner of the Best Oscar. Which, by the way, is a black cast. So you have the other situation of La La Land being kind of, all these white people were on stage. And all of a sudden, and the guy that, was, I must tell you, the guy that represented the La La Land people said, look, I want to stay on stage and present the Oscar to the Moonlight People. I thought that was a class.
Yeah. It's good so ad-lib.
It was. And all of these, basically black people start filing onto the stage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they come up. And at that point, I thought, you know, this is almost too good to be true, watching all of these things. Hey, it's live television for you, right? So that's what happened.
Yeah.
Maybe it was God's way of punishing all of these people for saying bad things about Donald Trump. Mm. What do you think?
Yep. Karma.
Uh-huh. Karma is indeed what we had. I want to make sure everybody knows, by the way, we are now on not only 1340 AM, but 106.1 FM. We sound even better on there. So go to either one here in Tampa Bay and join us also on our website, The Freedom, not The anymore, Our, excuse me, Our Freedom Works. .com, where you can listen to past shows, and Big Ed has set up all of our podcasts. My God, I am so good, even when you repeat me, because you probably have missed something the first time around. So go back and re-listen to the show. And thanks to Big Ed, we've got them all set up chronologically. OurFreedomWorks.com. Okay. So the Oscars, maybe that's a premonition of the way things are going right now, right? With Donald Trump and the press and Hollywood. I mean, they can't stand him in Hollywood. Although there was this actor, a conservative actor, I must give him credit. He plays a lot of tough guys. I think his name is Robert Davi. Somebody will correct me if I've got the first name wrong. He says, you know, there's a lot more conservative actors in Hollywood than they let on. And he said, with all this talk about open borders, he said, you don't see many of these Hollywood actors opening their doors and inviting immigrants, whether they're legal or not, into this theater where they're going to hold the Oscars. They don't do that, do they? No, no, no. Yeah, they can have the open borders, but you can't come into our place. And tell me, who has more bodyguards than a Hollywood celebrity? Do you think, by the way, they would open their front door and let people in there? So this is it Robert Davi, Ed? Do you know that actor? He plays tough guys. This is a conservative actor. And he made a lot of good points about how Hollywood is kind of hypocritical about this open border policy. Is it Robert Davi? Do you know who I mean? Maybe you don't know him. He plays a tough guy. Looks like a gangster kind of guy.
Is it Robert Duvall?
No.
No.
And it might not be Robert Davi. Anyway, we'll look it up. And he was saying that... they don't open the theater and let people pour in, do they? But they want the open border. So he was kind of talking about how hypocritical these Hollywood liberals are.
Yeah, let some immigrants in from Syria.
Do you know that you can't even get close to that theater for the Oscars? You can't even get close to it if you're just a normal person. They block off not only the theater and the property around it, they block off the streets. You can't even take your car and drive down the street.
Like 4 or 5 blocks, I think.
Yeah. And yet they want the... Yeah, see, there is this disconnect. There is a disconnect between what they really... their real lifestyle and what they preach. They get onto the jet planes. They're going all over the place. This actor I was talking about said, you know, when I go to make a movie in another country, none of the people that I work with here... in Hollywood are allowed to come with me. I've got to go, and all of the people over in those other countries are being employed because they will not allow Hollywood people to come. So he said, you know, it's kind of, the whole industry is kind of like that. You know, they have their own set of rules. It's not quite exactly the lifestyle that they live and the life, and they're not the same thing. So anyway, kind of interesting. Anyway, we're going to take our first break. And when we come back, you know that Donald Trump is going to be making an address, his first address, to a joint session of Congress tomorrow night. Going to talk with Trey Kovacs of the Competitive Enterprise Institute and find out what Donald Trump should talk about when it comes to employment.
This
is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Gentlemen, if you're looking for the best haircut at the best price in Tampa Bay, look no further than Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580. That's just west of US 19 in Clearwater. Andrew and Candy will see to it that you get exactly the cut you want. And if you remember how the barbershop used to be, where you were as much a friend as a customer, then this is the place for you. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580, just west of US 19. Open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5:30, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2.
Toastmasters International from District 48 presents Toastmaster Talk on the Tan Talk Radio Network, helping the world become better leaders and speakers with your hosts, Brenda Alaco, Kathy Nabe, Lynn Perry, and Joseph Camerari.
Join Toastmaster Talk every Thursday afternoon at 5 o'clock right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Tom O'Brien is on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Every Monday through Friday from 4 till 5 p.m., Tom takes to the airwaves as he breaks down the day's market action. Tom combines his technical knowledge of the markets with his years of trading experience to take your calls and questions every market day from 4 to 5 p.m. Whether you're new to trading or an active day trader, don't miss out on the Tom O'Brien Show live on the Tan Talk Radio Network from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Hi, this is Tim Del Toro.
And I'm Lou Angel Wolf, and we are the Grease Gurus.
Our show is broadcast every Saturday morning live at WTAN, Tan Talk Radio, 1340.
That's 10 o'clock every Saturday morning for an automotive forum that is flavored with humor and insight.
We encourage you to call in and be part of the Grease Gurus show.
We'd love to have you, and we will certainly help you find your inner grease.
This show is sponsored by Tim's Performance Service Center in beautiful Tarpon Springs at 906 Verona Place, and you can reach us personally at 727-543-1601.
Aha.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Monday morning. Thank you very much for being with us on Freedom Works, and we're delighted to have back Ray Kovacs, policy analyst at the Great Competitive Enterprise Institute. Donald Trump is going to be making his first presentation before a joint session of Congress tomorrow night, and Trey's going to talk about some of the things that Donald should probably talk about when it comes to employment and labor. Trey, good to have you back. So Donald gets up there. What should he say to Congress and to the people watching about what he should be doing when it comes to labor?
Well, thanks for having me, Paul.
Sure.
One of the things that he needs to say, because he said very little about labor and employment, is that the two major agencies, the Department of Labor and National Labor Relations Board, that we're going to do a complete 180, and we're going to stop meddling in, you know, private sector business and stop imposing these huge regulatory costs and paperwork burden hours. I mean, just at the Department of Labor under Obama, they imposed $55 billion in regulatory costs and 70 million hours paperwork burden hours. So he needs to say, look, you know, this wasn't working. We weren't creating jobs. We weren't growing the economy. We're going to, you know, change course at these major agencies that regulate labor relations and employment.
Well, you know, everybody knows that a lot of blue-collar union people helped elect Donald Trump. They would normally have voted Democratic, but they just felt that they were being stifled. And so I guess it goes kind of hand in hand with businesses coming back to the country, the way Donald Trump has tried to, I don't know, intimidate businesses to stay with their people. So do you think that this all kind of goes hand in hand? We got to, you know, for instance, to increase employment, we have to lower the corporate tax, which means businesses will try to expand a little bit more, which means they will hire more people. I mean, is he going to be able to incorporate all of that thinking into his address tomorrow night?
Well, I would assume that lowering taxes, you know, across the board should be a part of that speech. That's something that Congress and the president have said that they're going to try to get done in the first 100 days. So, you know, it would be amiss if he didn't mention that. I mean, certainly that is a huge component and something that needs to change, because under the Obama administration, for the first time in 35 years, there was more American business death than business birth. And that's hugely important for workers, union workers, you know, non-union workers, because small businesses are the main drivers of job creation. They create 60% of net new jobs. So if you're not lowering the burden and allowing businesses to grow, there's not going to be jobs for any kind
right.
of worker.
I mean, the regulatory problem has intimidated people. And you talk about small businesses, medium-sized businesses. You know, there are a lot of businesses that just have a handful of people. And the regulations now just scare them to death. I think we have a lot of black market businesses, don't we? Because, quite frankly, they don't want to go through the march, the paperwork bureaucratic march. So they don't even, you know, they try to open up perhaps without having to go through all of this. I don't know if that's true, but I would just suspect.
Well, I'm not sure about, you know, how large our black market is. Certainly not compared to what you see in Europe, where they have even worse regulatory burdens than we do. But you're certainly seeing it by businesses not opening. But, you know, one of the things that you've seen since Donald Trump won the election is optimism from small business community keeps going up and up and up. And, you know, one of you know, the main reason that is, you know, under the Obama administration, one of the prime concerns of the small business community was overreaching regulatory burden. And so Trump has said that that's one of the things, you know, he's issued a couple of executive orders to lessen the regulatory burden. So if he follows through on that, I mean, you're going to see a growth in business creation.
Now, one of the and you had actually 5 points, if I'm not mistaken here, under what President Trump should perhaps touch on during his speech. One of them is this thing about joint employment and independent contractors. Now, you and I know what this means, but you're saying rescind the Department of Labor's interpretation on joint employment and independent contractors. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So basically what the Department of Labor did is they issued what's considered a sub-regulatory action that doesn't have to go through the rulemaking process that makes one employer responsible for wage and hour violations of another employer that they contract with. So really what that does is it's going to make big business that's contracting with small business think twice about whether they want to be in that relationship. So that's going to harm, you know, job creators.
Right. Now, just so people understand what you're talking about, let's say McDonald's Corporation, the hamburger place, has franchises. And each of the franchises, you know, sets their own wages and working conditions in their restaurants with their employees. Right now, perhaps, Washington would say, okay, every McDonald's restaurant is basically a McDonald's restaurant. They all have to work the same way, the same pay, the same standards, everything else, right?
Correct.
And it's not like these franchisors can set their own standards. And this is what you're talking about when you talk about an overreach by the government?
Yes, correct. So, I mean, one of the things is it goes far beyond the franchisor, franchisee, most businesses, contract out, work, whether it's accounting, janitorial services, and things of that nature. But, yeah, certainly franchises contribute, enormous economic output. So that is one of the primary concerns. And it gets lost, by government regulators, is that all of these franchisees are independent small business people who make their decisions. And they shouldn't be tied in to the franchisor.
Mm-hmm. And you have an interesting point here. Appoint an advocate for sharing economy workers and employers within the Department of Labor. What's that all about?
Well, so the sharing economy uses almost exclusively independent contractors, individuals who just sign up for the app and essentially are their own small business people. And the sharing economy has gotten tied up in all of these joint employer regulations, in all these different regulatory burdens where they don't really fit into the 1930s Depression era labor laws. So what we've suggested is someone at the Department of Labor who would scrutinize regulations put out by the department and say, hey, you know, if you do this, this is going to really curtail the growth of the sharing economy that's giving people an opportunity to work.
So, you know that he won't get too much into the weeds, right, Donald Trump? He's going to touch on, because he's got a lot of other things he's got to talk about, I'm sure. But this has got to be key, because basically it's employment and the economy that probably resulted in the Donald Trump election. So if he just hits on some key areas, I mean, do you think he should talk about what the employment rate is right now, what the real employment rate is, or how should he formulate that portion of his speech on this? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I think you're right that he's not going to get into particulars. In most of his speeches, he does not. And so, one, that's been an issue for people like me to kind of get a grasp on what he's thinking about in labor employment, because he really doesn't touch on specifics.
Yeah,
but I think in just general terms, he needs to say that we're going to create a fertile employment, policy ground that allows people to innovate, have flexible rules so employers and workers can figure out, you know, what works for the business, what works for the worker, and, you know, really allow them to innovate and have government stop meddling in these private sector relationships where the private sector knows how to create jobs and grow. The government doesn't. So I think if he's just general in saying, look, we've heard your concerns, you know, from the campaign trail that Washington has been a roadblock to growth, and we're going to reverse that trend. I think if he says that, you're going to continue to see, you know, the optimism from the small business community, you know, rise in the stock market and things of that nature.
Yeah, it's been amazing. By the way, we're talking with Trey Kovacs, a policy analyst at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Donald Trump's going to be addressing a joint session of Congress tomorrow. It will be his first. Yes. And Trey and I are talking a little bit about the employment and the labor areas and the things that he should touch on. But, the economy is always like a priority issue in this country, you hear these employment figures, you know, whether they're good or bad, and the stock market, you touched on the stock market, it's been hanging at record levels right now, which I guess in some way, would you not think it indicates that there is some confidence in either what Donald Trump is going to do or the people around him are going to do regarding the economy?
Oh, absolutely. You know, he said a lot of the right things, you know, maybe not on specifically labor and employment, but everything he said about the drain and the regulatory burdens imposed by government, and you saw Steve Bannon at CPAC talking about how they want to deconstruct the administrative state. That's what's holding back business. So if they keep saying those things and keep issuing executive orders that say, you know, for every regulation you issue, you have to remove two, and things of that nature that are going to lessen these burdens that are inhibiting growth, you're going to see, you know, people have confidence in what they're trying to do. Now, a lot of these reforms are going to need Congress. So, you know, he may, in the end, get stifled by some of these things, but he can do a lot with a pen and a phone, as you saw with the Obama administration.
Yeah, you know, he's considered a populist, not necessarily, you know, conservative when it comes to different things. And in some cases, I see him substituting one set of regulations for another, if you know what I'm saying. Right. And so you don't know if, you know, you're going to, you know, will it wash out? But he's got these, I would suggest, very conservative people that he's appointing around him. You mentioned Steve Bannon and some of the others, and, of course, the Republican Party itself. So do you think they're going to kind of pull him towards more of a free market philosophy? Because you never know with him, right?
Right. I mean, and that's the real issue, is that you really don't know. ultimately the buck stops with him, and he's going to make these major decisions, and it's unclear how much influence some of these advisors and appointees really have with him. But like you said, he is a populist, and I think if he focuses on jobs and increasing the amount of opportunity that's available, that's going to appeal to people. If he focuses on forcing regulators to calculate how many jobs would be lost because of some of these regulations that are issued, that's going to have support from, you know, a broad base. You know, if he has, you know, regulators review rules to see what's been the impact on industry and job loss, you know, those are things that appeal to, you know, the people who voted for him, who believe in his populist message, but also would be good for the economy. We shouldn't be issuing rules that are killing hundreds of thousands of jobs. It just doesn't make sense. So I think you can get support from both sides of the aisle if he focuses on those things and kind of steers away from kind of some of the other issues that are far more, you know, combative.
Yes, indeed. Well, Trey Kovacs, as always, thank you so much. Look forward to talking with you again soon.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Paul.
Our pleasure. Trey Kovacs, Competitive Enterprise Institute. Okay, we're going to take our break. And when we come back, Congress is returning today to continue supposedly repealing Obamacare. But will they really do that?
Open up all the woman, not a hugging. So baby, can't you see that you were meant for me? I want your loving. Yes, sirree.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Gentlemen, if you're looking for the best haircut at the best price in Tampa Bay, look no further than Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580. That's just west of US 19 in Clearwater. Andrew and Candy will see to it that you get exactly the cut you want. And if you remember how the barbershop used to be, where you were as much a friend as a customer, then this is the place for you. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580, just west of US 19. Open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5:30, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2.
If you are in or near retirement, this message is for you. We've designed a brand new show with you in mind, Retire Sharp Radio. Each week, host Derek Afazi will teach you the Retire Sharp planning system. You only get one shot to make your retirement everything you want it to be. And that's what the Retire Sharp planning system is all about. So check out Retire Sharp Radio, Wednesday afternoons at 3.
Each week, the Talk of the Town show will be highlighting local news and events that are happening right here in Tampa Bay. How many times have you missed an event and wished that someone had reminded you about it? Well, now you can always be in the know. Stay tuned each Saturday at 9 a.m. and be informed about the interesting things that your neighbors are doing and hear interesting stories from people right here in your community. Tune in every Saturday at 9 a.m. at Tantalk WTAN.
The Rocket Sports and Entertainment Network show right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Looking for your sports fix? If it happened in the sports world, we've got it covered right here with your host, Rick Sassone, the Hockey Hottie, myself, Chris Dunn, Travis Failey, and many more. It's the Rocket Sports and Entertainment Network show right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
The Rocket Sports and Entertainment Network show is on Mondays from 1 to 4 p.m. on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on a Monday morning. Post-Oscar disaster Monday morning. And golly, we got a lot to talk about here now. Congress is coming back. Do you remember they were going to all those town halls and getting tomatoes and stuff thrown at them? Well, they're back. They cleaned up the tomato juice and they're back. And one of the things they're going to focus on, in fact, perhaps the prime thing they have to focus on, is repealing Obamacare. The question is whether or not they're really going to do it. Are we going to get Obamacare Plan B? It sounds like they're getting cold feet to me. If you listen to some of these guys, the way they're talking, instead of saying, yep, we're going to repeal it, we're unified, we're ready to go, we can't wait. They're going, well, okay, yeah, we're going to get around to repealing it at some point down the road here, and then we're going to bring up something even better, And we're not going to tell you what it is exactly right now, but I'm going to guarantee you it's going to be better than what you have. Well, you know, then what we're hearing in certain ways is we're going to get something else that the government's going to run rather than the current health care program that the government is running. That's not going to work. The reason that the health care program is not running now isn't all of these little minutia things that they put into Obamacare. It's the fact that you have the federal government dictating exactly what is going on with the health care program itself. They've taken control of health care. And that's not the way to do it. If you would just go back there and say, look, we're going to literally completely get rid of this health care program that Obamacare set up. We're going to allow the states on a certain date to be in control of the health care for the people of their states. We're not going to interfere in it, but we're just not going to run it from a federal standpoint anymore. Now, it's not that simple for Medicare and Medicaid. They're already kind of factored in there. But for everybody else that Obamacare went after, why is the government running any of it? It makes no sense. It's made the health care more expensive for everybody. And when they say, well, yeah, but we got some people that are poor. They're getting some things, but even their plans, the deductibles in their plans are ridiculous. And for the middle class and the people that are really paying for this Obamacare, now health care is kind of out of reach. They got to pay like $8,000, $9,000, $10,000, $12,000 before their insurance kicks in for a lot of their stuff. So it's certainly not as it used to be when we had more free market. And quite frankly, we haven't had free market health care since 1965. Before that, we pretty much did. You know, it was the best health care system in the world. And then Lyndon Johnson and the Great Society decided that we needed to have Medicare because for some reason, even though we were taking care of our elderly, apparently Democrats thought that they should be more taken care of by the government. And that's when the slippery slope began, and that's when the cost of health care started going through the roof. Because before that, it was amazingly affordable, amazingly affordable. So we now have all of these guys. We're going to find out if they have any guts. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin was on Fox News yesterday. He said that when Trump gets before the Congress tomorrow night, they're going to talk a little bit about health care, tax reform. But in the meantime, I just don't know that there's any one single unifying voice in Congress, whether it's in the Senate or in the House. Now, House Speaker Paul Ryan says Republicans will be keeping their promise on Obamacare, but you never hear anything more about it. So we'll see where it all goes. But if they could just figure out a way, I think, Ed, do you have some?
Well, I was just going to say you have a caller.
Oh.
He's not at the Master Barber Shop. He's on the Master Road.
He's on the Master Road?
So I thought he'd call
in. Oh, my goodness. Don't tell me we have Andrew the Master Barber out on the road. Is he trying to run over liberals? Is that you, Andrew?
No. Well, you know, believe it or not, I'm on my way to the National Cemetery in Bushnell to honor a veteran that passed away.
Oh, no kidding.
No kidding.
Well, that's wonderful.
And I had the radio on, and I hear you guys talking. I got nobody to talk to. I said, let me call Paul. What happened with the Oscars last night? I didn't watch it. Were they a pain in the butt?
No. Donald Trump got his hands on the envelopes at the very end of the Oscars, and he shuffled them around, and so they announced the wrong Best Picture winner. It was wonderful. There were tears in my eyes as Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty, who, by the way, together have probably supported... 7 or 8 plastic surgeons' salaries for the last 25 years, were given the wrong card, and they announced the wrong best movie. And then all of the people from the wrong best movie, La La Land, came traipsing up on stage and actually got into starting to thank everybody when they discover the mistake.
Yeah, beautiful. Couldn't happen to better people.
It was a wonderful thing.
Listen.
Yes.
You guys are talking about the Obamacare.
Yes, sir.
Repealing. You know, these guys, some of them, yeah, they're getting cold feet. But you know what the biggest fact of the Obamacare is?
What?
We don't have the money to pay for it.
Well, that's a minor. That's a minor inconvenience.
I mean, what don't people understand about this?
You're exactly...
There is no money.
You're exactly right, of course. No, we don't have any... We don't have any money to fund Obamacare. But has that stopped them? We got $20 trillion in debt.
Well, you know what they got to do? I know we're $20 trillion today. They want to keep going. But the people got to realize that we can't afford it. No, the only way we can afford it is if we don't allow the illegals in this country, we don't give these aliens welfare, and all those billions and billions and billions of dollars we're spending on that, it can go toward this. But you got to let these fools know the money's got to come from somewhere.
Right. Well, that is certain. You know? Yes, indeed. That is certainly a big chunk of it. We talked actually the other day about the percentage of immigrants, whether legal or illegal, that are getting welfare benefits. And it's amazing. There's about three-quarters of them. Three-quarters that are getting welfare.
That's right. Hey, maybe we can get it.
Exactly. Actually,
and when we get Medicaid, we don't have to worry about nothing. We can get money, we can get our rent paid for, and we can get health care. What are we doing wrong?
Well, these are the reasons that Donald Trump seriously got elected. There were people that were fed up. The middle class became fed up with the giveaway programs. And we've now taken the liberal segment of this country, and it is so segmented and separate. And now that, what is it, 1,000-plus political seats went to Republicans in this last election. I mean, it was an amazing, or Democrats lost 1,000. I guess that was it. Go ahead.
What do you think about California with old Gary Brown there, you know? It's like they said, look at the billions and billions of dollars they spent with the illegal immigrants. Now they got a hole in the dam. What are they going to do? They're looking for money.
Exactly right. Oh, they're in deep, deep doo-doo out there.
I wonder if there's enough aliens there, legal aliens there, to fill the hole in the dam.
I was going to say, have them all bring sandbags.
It's a shovel-ready job.
Yeah.
I just thought of a very grisly idea. We tell all of the illegal immigrants to kind of surround the dam, and then in case it, you know, and kind of prop it up. But then, you know, maybe if the dam does bust, maybe our problems would be solved out there. But I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that.
You don't have to. I think the man up above is taking care of business himself. But that's beside the point.
Yes, sir. I want to get back to where you're going again. You are going to honor a veteran that passed away. Is that right?
Yes, Paul, you know, a very, very dear friend of mine, his name was Bob Ranke. He served 20 years in the United States Air Force, all through Vietnam, Korea, everything. And this man passed away last week, and they're giving him full military honors at the Bushnell National Cemetery. And I'm on my way there to honor this man. He was a very good friend of mine, a customer for years and years. I would go visit him at the nursing home and cut his hair, but...
Wow.
Now it's time to go give him a military salute.
You are such a great guy for doing that. And it's interesting that you just mentioned that. A dear friend of mine who served in World War II, not that I'm that old, but in World War II, an older gentleman that I had befriended, and he was on the island of Iwo Jima. And by the way, you cut his hair.
Louis. His name had to be Louis.
It was Anthony. I mean, it was Tony Alice was his name.
There you go, Tony.
You remember him?
Yes, I do. I remember him very well.
He passed away on Friday, early morning Friday at the age of 93, and I did a little tribute at the end of our show Friday. So I can be kind of empathetic with you in the sense that we both kind of would want to honor two wonderful men.
That's what life is about, my friend. You have to give and you have to understand. Maybe some of these liberal people will get the idea.
You are so right, my friend. You are so right. Well, it was an added bonus for you to call in today, Andrew. And I appreciate that. Salute that gentleman for us, if you would. And we will be talking with you again for sure on Wednesday.
got it. But hey, is Ed's hair growing yet?
Is what?
Is Ed's hair growing yet?
You know, Ed's got a short haircut. It looks pretty good on him. You want him to grow it real long or what?
I have no idea. I'm just asking if his hair was growing back. That's all.
Oh, yeah. You got a full head of good hair. Yeah. Okay, my friend.
You're good.
Drive carefully.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye. There he goes. All right. We're going to take our final break. And when we come back, we are going to tell you the top 10 worst public schools in the country.
When you say goodbye, yes, that'll be the day. When you make me cry, you say you're going to leave. You know it's a lie, cause that'll be the day. When I die, well, you give me all your love.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Gentlemen, if you're looking for the best haircut at the best price in Tampa Bay, look no further than Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580. That's just west of US 19 in Clearwater. Andrew and Candy will see to it that you get exactly the cut you want. And if you remember how the barbershop used to be, where you were as much a friend as a customer, then this is the place for you. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580, just west of US 19. Open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5:30, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food & Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com.
My bridge is all...
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back. Hey, you know, tomorrow's the last day of February already. This year is moving quickly. Well, do you remember we talked not long back about a student who was recording his professor's rant against Donald Trump, and the student got suspended for recording the rant. Kid's name, 19-year-old Caleb O'Neill. He filed an appeal for being disciplined and then suspended. I'm trying to find that school's name again here. Orange Coast College, of course, out there in California. He was a conservative student. He had recorded his professor calling Donald Trump's election an act of terrorism. Can you imagine standing in front of a bunch of kids that are still, you know, learning, giving your political opinion on the president as an act of terrorism? So the kid recorded it, and the university had originally planned to suspend the kid, O'Neill, until at least the fall this year, also putting him on disciplinary probation and requiring him to write a letter of apology to the teacher, Olga Perez Stable Cox. That is a long name. But when the student started threatening to sue and his attorney started chatting, the Board of Trustees of the college convened a special meeting and voted Wednesday to say, never mind. Never mind, forget it. Come on back. So here's what the lawyer said for the student. He said, notwithstanding our relief that Caleb, the student, will no longer have a suspension on his record, the college's miscalculation leaves a blemish on its reputation. He says, we hope that the administration, the staff, and the faculty have learned from the errors made. It is unfortunate that no public apology to Caleb was issued. So here you go. I mean, we've gotten to the point where these colleges, just like in Hollywood, except it's worse, you have a captive audience of kids that are there to learn, you know? How about just teaching them the basic facts? Don't shape their public opinion. Do not do that. Don't call the president a terrorist. Can you imagine if a professor, say at the same college out there when Obama was president, called him a terrorist? Can you imagine what would have happened to that teacher? He would have been fired before the end of the day. Now, speaking of schools, back in the Chicago area, a public school in one of the wealthier suburbs in Chicago has gotten into all kinds of trouble after deciding that its annual seminar should focus on race and civil rights. Now, you got to remember that in Chicago, you got a lot of wealthy suburbs around there. And when you have wealthy suburbs, you have a, let's be honest, you have a lot of white people and fewer black people, because in general, wealthier people tend to be Caucasian, and, you know, in general, not always. Anyway, administrators and many parents and the seminar, or said that the seminar is particularly important because of the school's population, which is about 85% white. But the parents of these kids are the ones that are basically getting a little concerned about this. You know, I'm losing. There we go. We're going to have to change this machine sometime, Ed, because it just continues to, my headphone continues to go from stereo to monaural. Anyway, so the school board said, no, we got to go ahead with this this seminar on race and civil rights. We already set this. But the parents said, there's not enough diversity in the seminar. It's too politically progressive. It's too left-wing. And they want more conservative viewpoints. So this is very interesting about where this will be. But we're getting into, again, teaching politics. In this case, it's a high school, New Trier High School in Winnetka, rather than just teaching the basics. You know, political opinions are opinions, and that's all they are. And unless you're teaching a political science course and tell the kids up front, I'm going to give you my opinion. And even when you do that, you should then give other people a chance to question your opinion and to share their opinions. But that is not necessarily the case in these situations. So this is where we stand, and this is where we're going. And finally, we talk about the media and how it seems to be mainstream liberal, right? Well, the New York Times has shunned a bestseller. They're not even putting the book on their list. It was written by a conservative author. It's called The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again. It was named to at least three other bestseller lists, including USA Today, Publishers Weekly, and the Conservative Book Club, in addition to being named a bestseller by Amazon. Now, why isn't it on the New York Times bestseller list? Well, we all know why it's not, right? But the New York Times claims all the news that's fit to print. They used to claim that they were the harbingers of truth. They're talking about truth again, if you watch this ad that they're doing. And yet, they won't put a bestseller on their New York Times list because it's a conservative book. So there you go. All right. It is time. Speaking about schools, and we have been, I have got a list of the most recent worst public schools in America. Neighborhood Scout, a website which collects and analyzes data on neighborhoods and cities, determined the best and worst public schools in America. And these are based on test scores from the National Assessment of Educational Progress and No Child Left Behind. So here we go. Without further ado, top 10 worst. Number 10, Louis Munoz Marin School. Hmm. It's a grade A math, or I should say it's a school in Ohio. Math proficiency out of 100%, 9.4.
But there's spelling.
Spelling. Let's see. I don't see that on here. I do see science proficiency. 1.6 versus the average in Ohio of 64.9. Not good. Okay, number nine. On to Philadelphia. South Philadelphia High School. Their English proficiency is 22% out of 100, and their math is 15%. Not so good. Okay, number eight. Number eight, sorry. This is Frankfurt High School. And this is in where? Philadelphia again. Frankfurt High School. Very low efficiency. 25% out of 100 on English and 15% on math and 5% on science. Not good. Number seven. This is in Montana, way out west, where they have horses and bulls. Crow Agency School. This is an Indian reservation school. Doesn't tell you too much about things other than they aren't teaching the Indians out there very well. Number six. Broadway Academy. This is in Cleveland. It is a charter school. And you know, at least with charter schools, if they don't do that well, they're gone. As opposed to public schools who stay on forever, as do the teachers. Charter schools are a little more accountable. So we might not see Broadway Academy around very much longer. Number five, F.D. Moon Elementary School. Where is this one? Oklahoma. Their reading proficiency, 23% out of 100. Math proficiency is only 11%. Science, 9%. They ain't ready. Number four, Booker T. Washington Middle School. This is in Baltimore, Maryland. And let's just be honest, it ain't doing very well. Number three, North High School. This is in Akron, Ohio. It has failed in the entire school district there to meet the benchmarks of success. Number two, this is Fairview Pre-K through 8 School. Pre-K through 8. It should be just K through 8, shouldn't it? Anyway, though.
No, they do have a pre-K.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, some of them do.
Okay. You're right. Pre-K through 8 is what it says. You're right. And this is in Dayton, Ohio. Grade A math proficiency is horrible. 4% versus 53% in Ohio overall. Very bad. And finally, we're going to go to the number one. Worst.
Seems to be all in that general area, so stay in that general area.
You're going to stay there?
Yeah, Philadelphia somewhere?
Go further towards, like, Midwest.
Arkansas?
Go north.
I don't know.
Illinois. Yeah. In fact, it's actually right outside of St. Louis. It's East St. Louis Middle School. And I know how bad things were there. It's a basically an African-American community. It's got the absolute worst numbers. It was rated by Neighborhood Scout to be the worst public school in the country. So we got a lot of work to do there, right? Well, thank you very much for joining us, my friends. We will be back on Wednesday. And remember, freedom works.